na chaitana prabhani sana jaya chaita godana shivasadi.
The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jaya Vataka Swami on November 3, 1986 at New Panihati Dham in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th chapter, verse 22 through 37.
Sanat Kumara advised the king, "Therefore, my dear King Prithu, try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is living within everyone's heart, along with the individual soul in each and every body, either moving or not moving. The individual souls are fully covered by the gross material body and subtle body made of the life air and intelligence." Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, it is specifically advised that instead of wasting time in the human form of life, endeavoring for economic development and sense gratification, one should try to cultivate spiritual values by understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is existing with the individual soul within everyone's heart. The individual soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His Paramatma feature are both sitting within this body, which is covered by gross and subtle elements. To understand this is to attain actual spiritual culture. There are two ways of advancing in spiritual culture, by the method of the impersonalist philosophers and by devotional service. The impersonalist comes to the conclusion that he and the Supreme Spirit are one, whereas devotees or personalists realize the Absolute Truth by understanding that because the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Predominator and we living entities are predominated, our duty is to serve Him. The Vedic injunctions say, "Tat Tvam Asi," you are the same, and "Soham," I am the same. The impersonalist conception of these mantras is that the Supreme Lord or the Absolute Truth and living entity are one. But from the devotee's point of view, these mantras assert that both the Supreme Lord and ourselves are of the same quality. Tat Tvamasi Ayam Atma Brahma. Both the Supreme Lord and the living entity are spirit. Understanding this is self-realization. The human form of life is meant for understanding the Supreme Lord and oneself by spiritual cultivation of knowledge. One should not waste valuable life simply engaged in economic development and sense gratification. In this verse, the word kshatravit is also important. This word is explained in Bhagavad Gita 13:2. Idang sarirang konteya kshetramitya vidiyate. This body is called kshetra, the field of activities. And the proprietors of the body, the individual soul and the super soul sitting within the body, are both called kshatravit. But there is a difference between the two kinds of kshatravit. One kshatravit, or knower of the body, namely the paramatma, or the super soul, is directing the individual soul. When we rightly take the direction of the supreme, of the super soul, our life becomes successful. He is directing from within and from without. From within, He is directing as Chaitya Guru, or the spiritual master, sitting within the heart. Indirectly, He is also helping the living entity by manifesting Himself as the spiritual master outside. In both ways, the Lord is giving direction to the living entity, giving directions to the living entity, so that he may finish up his material activities and come back home, back to Godhead. The presence of the Supreme Soul and the individual soul within the body can be perceived by anyone by the fact that as long as the individual soul and the super soul are both living within the body is always shining and fresh. But as soon as the super soul and the individual soul give up possession of the gross body, it immediately decomposes. One who is spiritually advanced can thus understand the real difference between a dead body and a living body. In conclusion, one should not waste time by so-called economic development and sense gratification, but should cultivate spiritual knowledge to understand the super soul and the individual soul and their relationship. In this way, by advancement of knowledge, one can achieve liberation and the ultimate goal of life. It is said that if one takes to the path of liberation, even rejecting his so-called duties in the material world, he is not a loser at all. But a person who does not take to the path of liberation, yet carefully executes economic development and sense gratification, loses everything. Narada's statement before Vyasadeva is appropriate in this connection. Tyaktva swadharmam sharanam bhujam hare bhajana pakvota patetato jari yatra kvava padang abhut amusha king ko artapto bhajatang sudharmataha. Bhagavatam 1.5.17. If a person out of sentiment, or for some other reason, takes to the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and in due course of time does not succeed in coming to the ultimate goal of life or falls down due to lack of experience, there is no loss. But for a person who does not take to devotional service yet executes his material duties very nicely, there is no gain. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami purport of text 37, chapter 22, canto 4 of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter entitled Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Kumaras. Om Tat Sat. So, Sanat Kumar, one of the greatest scholars, devotees, liberated souls, and the first of the sons of Brahma, is speaking the absolute truth to King Prithu, the empowered incarnation of Godhead, empowering the power of administration. Sanat Kumar is explaining the nature of the individual soul and the super soul. Without the two, this body cannot sustain life. This understanding of life, of the super soul and the individual soul, is very important. That we understand the difference between the individual soul and the super soul, and we understand the difference between the individual soul and this gross material body and subtle body. These things must be understood for achieving self-realization. So many important points came out of this very long purport. One of the important points is that we are qualitatively one with Krishna, but we are not absolutely one. We are not one in all respects. As the Mayavadi philosophers would consider, we are only one in quality. One time, Advaita Goswami was feeling so upset that Lord Chaitanya was not mistreating him, that always Lord Chaitanya was treating him with great respect, even though Lord Chaitanya would not accept that Advaita Acharya could offer him respect, because Advaita Acharya was an elderly Brahmin. So Lord Chaitanya said, "No, you're my senior, don't offer me respect." But Advaita knew that Lord Chaitanya was in fact Krishna himself, so he wanted to offer respect to Lord Chaitanya as Krishna. So he became so frustrated that he could not offer respect to Lord Chaitanya that he decided that he's going to force Lord Chaitanya to mistreat him. So he went out and started to preach Tattvamasi Soham, we are everything is one, and started to preach the Mayavadi philosophy that how we are all of the same quality, and by realizing the absolute real mind. So when Lord Chaitanya heard that Advaita Goswami is teaching impersonal philosophy, he was so angry, he took up a stick and he went out looking for him. And when he found him, he was chasing him, "You don't dare preach this nonsense again." And then Advaita Goswami was running and laughing, saying that finally I got you to disrespect me. So, but Lord Chaitanya, you don't, under no circumstance, don't ever preach this impersonal philosophy again. So in other words, even someone as dear as Advaita Goswami, if he started to preach Mayavadi philosophy, then whatever respect Lord Chaitanya had, finished. He chased him with a stick. Of course, that was Advaita's plot. But we can take a lesson from it in the other regard. Someone may be very senior devotee or anything, but if they start to preach things which are impersonalistic, which are Mayavadi, or covered Mayavadi, or camouflaged Mayavadi, or disguised Mayavadi, or any other form of Mayavadi, that Lord Chaitanya is not going to recognize such persons, rather will de-recognize them. So, to be very careful not to become polluted by this Mayavadi philosophy. Mayavadis are very expert in presenting things and juggling words. In fact, it's not uncommon that after a big Mayavadi sannyasi gives a lecture in India, if you ask them, what is, you ask the people that have heard, how did you like the lecture? Oh, fantastic. Swamiji has said such wonderful things. And they just, and then you say, what did Swamiji say? But that I couldn't understand. But it was very wonderful. Because it's not that, the idea is not to understand, simply to tickle their brain and send them off. So, this is the thing. That sometimes people say, well, Swamiji, your lecture, they are so simple, you can understand everything you are saying. In other words, that's a disqualification. The qualification, you should say something so complicated that they can't understand, and they feel that he knows more than I do. So the communication is another way to try to non-communicate. Actually, when Prabhupada would speak, if people could give a little concentration, they could understand anything he was saying. It was very simple, but very profound. And this is the way the Vaishnava Acharyas speak. Is in order to the, so that people can understand what's the subject matter. But the Gyanis, sometimes they tend to say things in such a way that you can't understand what they're talking about. I would give Admatatra is very expert at giving these demonstrations. I don't think it's appropriate to give, however humorous it is, sitting here on the seat of yes. So, but the point is that they are able to twist the things in various ways. In fact, one time when Ramanujacharya was, this is explained in one purport by Srila Prabhupada, how Ramanujacharya was studying under Mayavadi. And the Mayavadi was giving an explanation from the Bhagavatam. And he took one verse which meant that Krishna has lotus eyes, lotus face, and things like that. And the person took the words and divided them in different places. Just like here in the verse today, there are some words which are actually very long. Dehendriyasu dishanatmavir. So we divide that as dehe, or body, deho, indriya, disha, Dishana, consideration, Atmabhi, self-realization. But if you divide the words up in different ways, you can get different meanings in Sanskrit. But this is a very natural way of dividing it up. But sometimes people, they might take a word like Kshetravit Tapataya, and they might start to just divide them up in different ways. So by doing that, you get all kind of meanings that are not the original meanings. So this guru, he took a very simple verse on Lord Krishna glorifying his beauty, but he divided the words so that it came that there was a black monkey by the name of Krishna, and he had, instead of saying a lotus feet with a red color, it said his face was like the red of the rear end of a particular kind of monkey, and just horrible thing, and then all of a sudden he looked and he saw that Ramanujacharya was crying. He said, what's wrong? What's the matter? Why are you crying? He says, you just said such horrible things about my Lord. So how can a person not cry when they hear these things? And so in this way, they don't like to say anything good about Krishna. Just like I mentioned, sometimes one famous speaker, he was saying, when someone was saying, well, this Hare Krishna chanting seems to give a lot of force, a lot of spiritual strength to the chanters. What is the meaning for this? This must mean that the names of Krishna, the personality of Krishna, has got spiritual potency. And he said, no, it's not the names Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It's not the names that you're chanting. It's the little voids between the names. The voids give the Shakti. Without the void, what is the name has no meaning. It's the void, see? Oh yes, Swamiji is so smart. So in this way, they don't like to give Krishna the credit. That's why Lord Chaitanya said, Mayavadi Hoya Aparadi. That the Mayavadis, they make so many offenses against Krishna. Just like, what would you say if you went up on the street in Sankirtan, there's a nice couple, and you start telling a person, oh, your girl here is very nice, but she has no face, no arms, no legs, no breasts, no eyes, no, you know. This is what they say, that the Supreme Absolute Truth has got no form, no quality, no, like, so if you start describing that to someone, how their friend has got no features, pretty soon the person would be putting his fist in your face, at least here in America, for sure. So the point is that by describing the Absolute Truth to be simply impersonal, to create that absolute Advaitism, they have to commit so many offenses. See that, he gets Prashant? And for this reason, we are advised not to hear the words of the impersonalists. Because in doing so, we have to hear offenses. And if we hear offenses that cuts our spiritual root, then we are forced to, then we lose our shakti, then we can get bewildered, and it's like a, what they call a tailspin, fall into a descending, instead of being yuppies, we are the other way, dippies, going down, dipping into the material world. So, the Bhagavatam is very practical. If someone gives it a good hearing, they can understand what is life, what's the difference between the dead body and the living body. And then they can start to assign priorities to their life. We have a living body. It's going to be dead. So should we waste our whole life simply decorating and preparing things simply for the dead body? Is that the goal? Or should we actually consider the living body and how to provide proper spiritual food and development for the living soul, the real essence of life, so that again and again we don't have to return to conditioned material life. So the Krishna conscious way, of course, is not to simply waste the whole life making preparations with the body, but to cultivate our own Krishna consciousness so that we can achieve the real perfection of life. And someone may say, well, that's well and good, but in material life you got both feet on the ground, there's so many things you can enjoy. I mean, you know what you're getting. But in the spiritual life, maybe we won't... What are we going to get out of it? I mean, all right, if we achieve perfection, we can get liberation and we can achieve love for Krishna. But we see that so many senior people, even in the history, great devotees, they haven't succeeded in their same lifetime. They started off and they fell down. Even we've seen that some older devotees, sometime they leave. So then, what is the future? Why should we take a risk? So in this regard, Narada's statement before Vyasadeva is very appropriate. He said, if a person out of sentiment or for some other reason takes to the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and in due course of time does not succeed in coming to the ultimate goal of life, or falls down due to lack of experience, there is no loss. But for a person who does not take to devotional service, yet executes his material duties very nicely, there is no gain. Somebody takes a risk, whatever devotional service they've done, they'll reap unlimited benefits for that. And they get opportunities. And it's auspicious that one gets his good reactions first. Even after a person falls down, they are no doubt liable for any material activities they perform, but if they hadn't been devotees, they would have performed those activities in any case. So they would have been liable. But by performing devotional service, they have accrued so many auspicious sukritis or punyas, and they are able to enjoy the results of those first. So they get more opportunity to engage in liberation. It says that they can take birth in the higher planetary systems for a long period of time, and then in the end, they get another opportunity on this planet by being born in a family of devotees or yogis or brahmanas or rich people. And then they get another opportunity to take up for their spiritual life. So actually, one doesn't lose anything. While being a devotee, where's the difficulty? Devotee life is very peaceful, very happy. But if somehow, due to bad association, one's a little bit immature, so they're not careful, they're careless, they make mistakes, they might fall down. Even then, what have they lost? They haven't lost anything. They've gained so much. And that is a type of spiritual wealth which stays with them even life after life. So people should take an opportunity to render devotional service. That is the greatest opportunity one has. There's no greater opportunity, no greater service one could do. And even if one's not able to stay on the path the whole life, what have they lost? But by not engaging in devotional service, what have they gained? Then they're still facing the same problems of life, birth, death, old age, disease, conditional life. There's no hope. But for those who are engaging in devotional service, there's every hope that they can be successful. And in any case, there's no loss at all. This is the special mercy of the Sanat Kumar. He's teaching this not only to Prithu, but to all of the people who are present there. So we can take advantage of his instruction and be very serious in our devotional service, chanting Hare Krishna, and following Srila Prabhupada back to home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any question? Whatever Bhakti Siddhanta presented was very direct. The difference that he was so actually scholarly. He wasn't word jugglering. Like you read Bhakti Siddhanta's works, you can every word is like a sutra. It's like a riddle almost. But not, it's not a riddle. It's just written so profoundly. He puts so much into so little, few words. Because he chooses his words so well that it requires intense concentration. Of course, Prabhupada, out of humility, was saying that, but obviously he did understand Bhakti Siddhanta. That's why he carried out the orders of Bhakti Siddhanta and spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. But he was one of the more educated followers of Bhakti Siddhanta because he had a degree from the University of Calcutta and was very high family. He could understand. But out of humility, he was saying, I was the only one who understood. He was saying, you know, he had difficulty understanding. Even then, Prabhupada was presenting that even he had difficulty, he had to really concentrate to understand his spiritual master. So therefore, what chance is there, what hope is there for us? Therefore, we should read Prabhupada's books and understand his teachings. You can read the Brahma Samhita is there. And Bhakti Siddhanta's writing is practically like poetry. Every word is so well chosen. And I remember I showed that to one person in the university, and they read in 1968 or something like that, and they read and they said, well, they just couldn't relate with it. It was like, said something frivolous. I mean, they just found it was so, even for a very highly educated people, it's very hard to, his language is so, I mean, now it would be considered a bit antiquated or something, but at that time, that he was so well learned in English, so well read in English, that he could present, or even in Sanskrit, any language, he could speak fluent Sanskrit. So when he would speak or when he'd write, it was just very concise, it's very erudite. But it wasn't with the idea of confusing the people. It's just that at that time, in the Vaishnava world, there was no proper preacher to protect the movement of Lord Chaitanya, to present the teachings of the six Goswamis. So Bhakti Siddhanta, he went to preach in competition with all of these other people who are just word jugglering. But he didn't word juggle. He presented the absolute truth that people had to use, but they could appreciate that what he was saying was so scholarly, was so philosophical, it was so erudite that it had to earn their respect. If they were a little foolish and couldn't understand, they would respect it because they couldn't understand it. They'd fall in the same category. But that wasn't his purpose. The purpose was that people would understand. But the people at that time, the really highly qualified scholars, were more educated. They could also speak Sanskrit. They could, more than today at least. And so that those who were highly qualified, they could appreciate what he was saying. It wasn't also just that he was speaking in high language, but the topic that he was speaking on was also very elevated. He wrote, he spoke on the Jiva Goswami, Sandarvas, and so on. The point is, even if you sit down and read, have it transcribed, what they said, read what the Mayavadis say, even you read it, even you, it's not that you can't understand what they're saying, it's what they're saying doesn't make any sense. And most of the time, the basis of this is this, and that adds that, and this is this, and this is that, and they carry out a logic, and then this means that, and this, and then, you know, but it's like all logic. Bhakti Siddhanta is not presenting just dry, mundane logic. He's presenting spiritual, Krishna conscious, philosophy based upon the Vedas, with references, with quotes, and, it's not just a juggly of words, it's very concise, it's very accurate. I mean, you'd have to compare the two, and then it's you can see it's like day and night. Although the end result for someone might be the same, that it goes over their head. But that it's actually a difference between day and night, because those who are very attached to that type of, they should read the works of Bhakti Siddhanta, then they'll be satisfied by having read or heard some philosophy which goes over their head, that they can have that satisfaction. But if they chant Hare Krishna, eat a little prasadam, and then they study very carefully, then you can make it out. It just requires very intense concentration, which is very enjoyable, actually. So to smash someone or to defeat someone's philosophy, you have to be able to be understood. You can impress somebody by just saying something and they don't understand it, but if you want to actually convince someone or defeat someone, you have to be able to communicate. So he wasn't able to communicate. Well, Prabhupada said here, there are two ways of advancing in spiritual culture, by the method of the impersonalist philosophers and by devotional service. There are sincere impersonalist philosophers. There are. There were. Somewhere in history there have been. But today the problem is there's a proliferation of impersonalist philosophers. If they were really sincere, they would be convinced possibly by Vaishnava philosophy when they faced it, just like Prakashananda or others. But there are right now a lot of, because impersonal philosophy gives you a lot of leeway to do anything and speculate. There are a lot of imposters proliferated in the market today who don't follow the four regulative principles, for one. Who don't strictly refer to the Vedas in their discourses. There are a lot, you have to be careful. But there is a sincere, such as an entity as a sincere impersonal philosopher, and that's one way of achieving absolute truth. So there's two ways, Prabhupada said it. These are the two broad categories. Within that, there are so many other subcategories. Because impersonalism is very dry. How long can you talk about the nothing? There's nothing to say, right? But they say tons of, you know, volumes of books about the void. So people get bored. So it's better for them to discuss about the personality of God because it's very attractive. But then at the end, because they're impersonalists, that's why it says, Avaishnava makod girnang sravanang noiva kortabhyam. Putang harikotam ritang sravanang noiva kortabhyam sarpuchisanata payam. Now don't listen to the words of the non-Vaishnavas. Even when they're discussing Hari Kothamrita, when they're discussing the glories of Hari. Because it's like taking milk that's touched by the lips of a serpent. It'll have a poisonous effect. They'll discuss about Krishna, but in the end they'll just say, yes, Krishna has said in the Bhagavad Gita, give up all other religions and simply surrender unto the void within me. Where does it say that? Where does it say Krishna said the void within me? But they just throw in something like that, and then that bewilders their follower. There's no void within Krishna. Krishna is the same within and without. Sakalindriya vittimanti, satchira, Krishna vai, satchirananda gana, Krishna di purusha, Krishna purushottamaha. Krishna's quality is satchirananda. It's a Vedic aphorism. But there's nowhere there's a satchirananda sunya. That there's satchirananda and there's another one inside there, there's nothingness. No, it's sat, chit, ananda, eternity, knowledge and bliss. Doesn't say anything about voidness. These three qualities are there. It's a satchirananda gana, he has qualities. So, but they'll just throw in something like that, and then you'll be taking, they'll say, yes, a living entity is like a piece of ice floating in the ocean. And eventually they melt and become one. They say a little thing, you know, you think, yes, it's a little piece of ice in the ocean. The ocean is water, the ice is water, but because of some change now, this little soul has got form, and then eventually, that little, when the ice melts, it becomes God. So when our form melts into the nothingness, we become God. And they'll present things, and they're like, oh yeah, that's a pretty good idea. Why didn't I think of that? You know? And this way people get bewildered. How are we ice? What is the difference? Why are we ice and the absolute truth is water? Where is the similarity in that comparison? Where do the Vedas say that in any place? But they just throw in things like that. That's particularly in the Gita Press, Bhagavad Gita. They throw in the ice analogy. No, they're supposed to be simply a direct translation. In parentheses, they throw in these little bits of poison so that someone reading it gets the wrong idea. So therefore, one has to have a proper Vaishnava spiritual master and study the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Vedas, under a Vaishnava spiritual master. Otherwise, you get bewildered. They can throw in little boomerangs, little loopholes, where you least expect it. You're one drop merging into the ocean. This is the common. And Prabhupada said, if we are the Vaishnava wants to be the fish in the ocean, we go deep, the drops get evaporated by the sun and taken back up. Like this, the impersonal liberation is not permanent. You go there and eventually you come back again into the material world, the clouds of illusion. You get sucked up. But the fish, they stay, the deep water fish, they stay deep under the water in the ocean of nectar. So they remain immune from that danger. Hare Krishna. That's Kanishtha Adhikari. That's being a neophyte. Neophytes are more impersonal, but we don't consider them as impersonalists. I'm going to be saying too much. They're more impersonal. They're less realized. They think that God is a person, but they don't understand beyond that, what is the relation or the importance of the Lord's devotees? So this is not necessarily impersonalism, but it just means that they're neophyte. They're not really advanced in the personal concept. They just understand a really basic thing. But if they believe that the absolute truth is a person, then that's not an influence of impersonalism.